Welcome to Federal Insights for May, sponsored by NEC Corporation.
Welcome to another edition of Federal Insights. I'm Eric White. What is the current status of biometric devices? How accurate are they and can they be? These important questions are perfect for the folks over at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. NIST scientists have been testing biometric devices for several years now and report on their accuracy rating, along with suggestions for potential uses. One of those scientists is Patrick Grother. I spoke with him about his team's ongoing work in the field and what we can expect from these tools in the future.
We've been mostly engaged in algorithm testing, biometric algorithm testing. So the core underlying pattern recognition technologies that recognize fingers or irises or faces, we've been evaluating whether they work or not. And what we've been noticing is that, particularly in face recognition, is that there have been very great gains in accuracy over the last 5 years. And those gains stem from the application of a new class of technology called convolutional neural networks, which give the algorithms quite a new and considerable ability to compensate for deficiencies in any given photograph of a face. So if the image is dark or the subject is not looking at the camera or is maybe blurred, the new generation of algorithms are quite capable of sort of seeing through that towards the identity cues that they need to be able to do recognition.
And so is the facial recognition portion or devices in the biometrics field, are those excelling faster than fingerprint technology or iris technology?
So I think fingerprints, particularly 10 fingerprint systems, the so-called APHIS machines that have been the sort of the mainstay of the biometrics industry for decades really, they were always good to start with, and they've come a long way also. But the face recognition accuracy gains are a new thing. It's really over the last 5 years or so since convolutional neural networks have been trained to be able to do face recognition.
And so just how accurate have the facial recognition devices gotten? Is there an example you can give me of the convolutional neural networks kind of in action and just how accurate they can be?
Yeah. So if you were to take a mugshot of me, which is a portrait photo that's conforming to a photographic standard, and you were to search it against a database of, say, 12 million people, that's the size of the database that we've been using in our tests recently, then with quite high certainty, you can guarantee that you would find a prior photo of me within that database. And that scales very well from small databases, just say a few hundred thousand, up to the 12 million that we tested with. The headline number, the most accurate algorithms that we tested, will return the correct face. My example, my face, it would return that about 97.7% of the time in the first position of the candidates that it guesses. That said, not all face recognition algorithms are the same, and there's a considerable diversity and capability across the industry. And so that 97.7 number can easily be down in the 80s for other algorithms that aren't as capable.
And so do you see the algorithms only getting better and better as people, you know, continue testing them? And are we going to see a point where it's up in the, you know, maybe even the 99% or 100%?
Yeah, that is certainly true. And in fact, an upcoming report that we have will show that certain algorithms are capable of matching photographs that are where the subject is looking at 90 degrees to the camera. So you've got a side view of the face. And in that case, nobody takes mugshots that way deliberately. But an algorithm that's capable of compensating for sort of the way the subject is looking at the camera is going to be quite capable. And so that task of doing cross-angle recognition has been a very popular topic in academic research for a long time, and it's now reached what you might call sort of commercial fruition.
Are there any other drawbacks from these devices that convolutional neural networks can compensate for? Or is it just, you know, hey, we're just getting right into it of, you know, whether or not someone's looking directly at the camera or if it's a clear picture?
Well, so far, none of the algorithms are actually capable of distinguishing between twins. So if you search your twin against the database, and of course the twin is not in the database, then if you are in the database, then your twin would be falsely matched against you. So the algorithms are sort of a bit too effective. They'll find people that look very similar to you, which then the twins are the obvious case there. And so whether the new generation of CNNs can be trained to not falsely match on twins is an open question.
And right now, is it only twins being or tricking the devices, or is it just family members in general that you're seeing some false positives come through?
Yeah, we don't have good numbers on family membership like that because we don't have the data, but we do have some twins data, and we're getting some more twins data to better characterize that. And of course, it's a bit different between identical twins and fraternal twins. And fraternal twins can be of a different sex. So in that case, recognition sometimes succeeds quite well.
We're speaking with Patrick Grother. He's a computer scientist at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. This is coming from a very, very basic perspective. How are algorithms programmed into these biometric devices? Because, you know, I think a lot of people think of these devices, okay, it's a camera and, you know, it's just analyzing the pictures that it's taking, but it's actually, you know, a form of technology that is problem solving and almost learning on the fly like that. How is that process? You know, when did that come into biometric devices?
I'm not sure that most of the biometrics industry is not building algorithms into devices. There are some new surveillance cameras with sort of a match on board capability, but something like an e-passport gate where you go through an airport or immigration, those systems aren't built on an integrated device. They're built with components. Now, certainly cell phones have been equipped recently with cameras, 2D and 3D cameras, to unlock the phone or to authorize a transaction. And in that case, I don't think the algorithms are retraining. They have a fixed representation of what a face looks like, and they recognize the owner of the phone on the basis of a fixed representation without too much adaptation. I think there are adaptive schemes, but you wouldn't call that retraining.
So it's more of it's just comparing it to a database that it has. It's always just as good as the data that it has beforehand.
Yeah, that's right. So broadly, face recognition algorithms and all biometric algorithms compare two images, two faces or two irises or two fingerprints, and render a similarity between the two images. And that calculation, if you repeat it 1,000 times, will give you the same answer because there's nothing changing about the algorithm. Certainly, people have thought about doing online adaptation and changing to the input signal, but it can be a little bit hazardous from a security perspective to do that, because maybe then I could sort of learn how to use your phone.
You've done a little work on this subject as well of the research itself into biometrics devices. As I just mentioned, I think a lot of people don't even know that algorithms come into play with analyzing biometric data. What can be done to, I guess, not simplify, but make it a little easier for people to understand the research that's going into these devices?
There's a lot of opportunity to try and explain and to simplify these things. At its core, biometrics operates by comparing two samples. Two images go in, and you produce a measure of similarity between the samples that are in those two photos, fingers or faces or iris. And so, you know, there's some quite good tutorials online about how AI works. And we've put quite a bit of emphasis into our reports recently to try and explain to end users the factors that they need to think about if they're going to have a successful use of the technology. And often that is involved with feeding the algorithms good samples, so good photographs or good fingerprint images. And so that's where successful outcomes in biometrics sort of arrive. They stem from taking good pictures in the first place.
Patrick Grother is a computer scientist at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. If you missed any of the interview, you can find it online. Go to federalnewsnetwork.com and click on Federal Insights. Coming up next, one of the agencies deeply interested in NIST's findings is looking to expand its use of biometric devices at a rapid pace. I'm Eric White.
NEC is the world leader in advanced recognition and artificial intelligence technologies that address today's national defense and homeland security challenges. Their solutions include facial recognition, video surveillance, analytics, intrusion detection, and other biometric security applications, delivering scalable end-to-end technology that enables the safety, security, and economic interests of the United States. Large federal agencies, including DHS, rely on NEC's technology on a daily basis. Learn more at necam.com/ARM.
One of the agencies most well known for using biometrics technology is Customs and Border Protection. Some of you may have seen the facial recognition devices being used in major airports across the country. The agency's plans for biometrics do not end there, though. To find out where this is heading, I spoke to Dan Tansier, who's Deputy Executive Director of Entry-Exit Transformation at CBP.
We've been working with fingerprint technology for several years now. In fact, we implemented that program in 2004. When we began to collect fingerprints from all of our international visitors to the United States. Fast forward the clock here to 2016, and we figured out that we could use facial comparison technology to quickly, easily, and effectively match people up to their travel documents while also meeting the biometric exit mandate, which has been on the books for quite some time. So we're quite excited. We have commitments to work together with our airport and airline industry stakeholders from 25 of them. Our goal is to have biometric air exit rolled out to the top 20 airports, covering 97% of international departing travelers by early 2022.
And what about at the border? I know that, you know, just regular exit entry points at the border, CBP is looking at biometrics there. What's the state of that?
Yes, so we are on the hook to do biometric exit across our air, land, and sea. Land is a bit of a more tricky situation in regards to the fact that we don't get advanced passenger information like we do in the air environment. Nevertheless, we have implemented land pedestrian facial comparison technology in Arizona at three locations, and we're looking to expand that across the southwest border throughout the remainder of this calendar year. What's that? That's enabling us to quickly match travelers to their travel document, and it's also closing a security gap for us with respect to imposters, people using genuine U.S. documents that don't belong to them. And so far, we've already accounted for 124 individuals using somebody else's document to try to make entry to the United States. So we're really excited what this technology is going to bring to us from a security perspective across the board. Additionally, of course, we have vehicles. We are experimenting with cameras that can take facial comparison quality photographs from moving vehicles. We are kind of excited to see what the future holds there. So far, we have very positive results on the ability to capture images from moving vehicles. The problem, of course, is it's good for compliant people who want to obey the law, but maybe not as effective for people trying to, hide the fact that they're departing the United States because they can simply cover their face or hide behind the seat. But we're looking at that technology and think that that's going to be real helpful for us.
Dan Tansier is Deputy Executive Director of Entry Exit Transformation at Customs and Border Protection. A lot to unwrap there. So you mentioned how when travelers are coming by land, you don't have prior passenger information. What kind of data are you all comparing that to? If you don't know that they're coming, are you just kind of just searching them in the database? And if they're not in there, you're putting them in there? And how do you know they're telling the truth the first time, I guess?
Yeah, so you may recall in 2008, a law was passed called the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative. I should say that the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative was implemented in 2008, which required all persons crossing the land border to have what we call a WIDI-compliant travel document. And that would be either a passport card, a trusted traveler card, or in the case of the southern border, a border crossing card. Those documents were all issued by U.S. entities that we have access to those photos. And what we're doing in the current environment is we read the RFID card, which then accesses the database where the image is stored, and we match the traveler standing in front of us to the photograph on file for that travel document.
Understood. And so you've been a CBP officer in the field. What has this done to transform officers' day-to-day tasks? And, you know, is it making it easier or harder at the same time?
Yeah, no. I think one of the key things that we're doing, though, is really introducing the technology to the officers, describing how it works so that everyone's comfortable by the time we get to a port of entry and we roll this out. But really, it makes the job of the officer a little easier in because they don't have to focus on administrative tasks anymore. So we're no longer having to handle travel documents, for example. The information based on the face match is there for the officer to review. So we're focusing much more closely on the interview or the interaction with the traveler and less on the administrative tasks of, you know, collecting fingerprints from foreign nationals each and every time they come here or having to compare a traveler to their 2-inch by 2-inch photograph in their passport. So the technology is really making things life simpler for the CBP officers so that they can focus on what we really need to do, and that's, you know, find bad guys and prevent bad things from entering the United States.
That's Dan Tansier, Deputy Executive Director of Entry Exit Transformation at Customs and Border Protection. Hear the rest of our interview with him after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
NEC is the world leader in advanced recognition and artificial intelligence technologies that address today's national defense and homeland security challenges. Their solutions include facial recognition, video surveillance, analytics, intrusion detection, and other biometric security applications, delivering scalable end-to-end technology that enables the safety, security, and economic interests of the United States. Large federal agencies, including DHS, rely on NEC's technology on a daily basis. Learn more at necam.com/AR.
If Customs and Border Protection is going to use biometric devices to identify people, they're going to need to be highly accurate. There may be some work to do in that area, though. Just last year, an Inspector General report showed the agency's devices had accuracy rates around the mid-80s, which the IG says needs improvement. So what's CBP shooting for? I spoke with Dan Tansier, Deputy Executive Director of Entry-Exit Transformation at CBP, to find out.
So we've always had what we call a technical match rate, which is the rate at which we match folks who have an expected photograph to match against. When the Inspector General report came out, it really relied on early data from, you know, the first couple months of the program, and we were really just getting everything situated. Since the time of that report, we've made great strides in our match rates. And we can right now, we show that we have technical match rates in the 98-99% range, and we continue to work to refine and make sure the system's operating at its full peak performance. The other piece that we're, you know, working slowly on, of course, throughout land, air, and sea is we have to ramp up to the point where we're actually collecting the photographs from travelers, you know, at 100%. Right now we're working this into the operations, and so there is no enforced compliance at this time. This is all working with people on a voluntary basis. If folks don't want to participate, they can opt out of the photo process. And so over time, you'll see us start to ratchet that up. But right now, we're in an informed compliance type of arrangement with our airports, our travelers, both land, air, and sea.
Yeah, some hesitation from travelers may be, you know, I don't know if you can protect this data. What sort of protocols have you all put in place now to improve data protection of this information that you all have?
Yeah, there's obviously some concerns with any new technology. I recall the same concerns when we were working with radio frequency identification technology or RFID technology. And, you know, we've learned a lot of lessons over the years, and so we've been fully committed to working with the privacy office, both at DHS and at CBP, to ensure that we built the system from the ground up with privacy principles in mind. So, for example, the photograph that is taken at the boarding process in the airport is encrypted and sent to us. The only thing that we send back is a yes-no result with a unique identifier. So there's no biographic information being attached to the photograph in these transactions. The second piece here is, of course, we go through, you know, significant cybersecurity testing for our systems, and we also are very transparent about what we do with the data, how it's used, how long it's kept, and all of that's available through our privacy impact assessments, which are online at DHS.gov. So we really took to heart the need to ensure privacy in a system like this by engaging also our privacy advocates. We also work closely with the DHS Data Privacy and Integrity Advisory Committee, who also gave us recommendations that we are working towards meeting for those few that we didn't quite meet. So we're trying to be very engaged with our privacy community.
And, you know, this is all possible because of partnerships with other entities and other agencies. NIST and TSA come to mind. I know that NIST puts out reports all the time on, you know, where the biometrics technology is and the status of its accuracy rates. How do you all implement their recommendations from reports on biometrics devices?
Well, it's clear that we have to be in close partnership with the National Institute of Standards and Technology. In fact, we've executed an interagency agreement with them so that they can work with us as we continue to define the processes by which we measure accuracy and system performance. And so they work closely with us, and we know that's very important. We look at their work as obviously standard setting and accepted across the world, and so we're really pleased to be in partnership with NIST as we continue to implement this biometric program across the country. We also really review all of the material that they put out. I think one of the most interesting items from NIST is the assertion that facial recognition technology has increased 20 times in accuracy in the past 5 years, and that just really starts to demonstrate the accuracy of this technology and the great impact it can have across the travel continuum for a security perspective, both for CBP and TSA, who we're also working very closely with.
Yeah, I also spoke to NIST on this subject, and my guest did fill me in on how accurate it has become. He did say, though, that there is one problem with twins, and so I'm interested what the CBP protocol is when you run into twins at the border or airports.
Yeah, twins are a challenge, certainly, for facial comparison technology, and quite frankly, it's a challenge sometimes for the human eye. So that's why we focus our inspections on the determining purpose and intent in the interview. It's through that interview where we'll really be able to get the additional background data to be able to positively identify someone. We don't use facial comparison technology as the end-all, be-all identifier. Our CBP officers are the ones that make the final decision. And so, you know, twins is a vulnerability that we talk to our officers about and talk about how you potentially thwart that potential situation.
Dan Tansier is Deputy Executive Director of Entry-Exit Transformation at Customs and Border Protection. You can find this entire episode on our website. Go to federalnewsnetwork.com and click on Federal Insights. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for May, sponsored by NEC Corporation on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.